Welcome to the Good Glow podcast with Amy White. This season of the Good Glow is brought to you with thanks to Boyne Valley Honey. Boyne Valley Honey is the official breakfast partner of Pieta's Darkness into Light 2026, proudly supported by Electric Ireland. Why not take part in the Darkness into Light walk on May 9th at 4:15 a.m. at a location near you? This is a really powerful moment of connection and support. I'll be there at the Phoenix Park, and I can't wait to feel the collective energy of doing something so important and special as communities come together and raise funds to support suicide and self-harm prevention. You can find more information on darknessintolight.ie. I'll leave this link in the show notes. And don't forget to pick up a promotional pack of Boyne Valley Honey in stores nationwide, with 25 cent going to Pieta, because even if you can't make the event, you can still support such an important cause. Welcome to this episode of The Good Glow with Amy White, a podcast that has been 6 years in the making, and you'll understand more about that as you listen. Amy's story begins with a cervical cancer diagnosis at just 25, but what followed is a journey of love, loss, hope, surrogacy, and sisterhood. In this episode, we talk about the moment Amy's sister Katie offered to carry her baby, and this is just the tip of the iceberg of such an incredible story. Amy speaks today about going to New Zealand for that 20-week scan, and if she hadn't have made that decision, she may not have met her baby until she was 18 months old. We also speak about our embryos being in the back of a car together in Ukraine on the day the war broke out. Our agency's embryologist put all of our embryos into the back of his car as bombs dropped on Kiev and drove them to safety in Slovakia. We speak about what that day was like for us. Amy's second baby was born early in Tbilisi, when Amy and her husband Reggie were still in Dublin. I speak to her today about what that was like and what it was like going to Dublin Airport knowing her baby was already born on the other side of the world. We also speak, and I suppose for me, my surrogacy journey was so private, and I didn't even speak to anybody else who had been through surrogacy before I had Tali, because it just felt like a very solo journey for me. So today is the first time that I actually speak to somebody who understands what it's like when another woman gives birth to your baby. It's so intimate. It's almost like we weren't recording this for a podcast. So I'm nervous for people to hear it, and I can't wait for your feedback. I'm so grateful to Amy for opening up today. I know she's grateful to everyone for their support, to her sister, to her amazing surrogate in Georgia, to the surgeon who saved her ovaries and allowed her to go on an IVF journey despite having had a hysterectomy. Annette Hickey, who is our surrogacy solicitor and Tali's godmother, the woman who is responsible for so many of us being able to have babies in this country. Annette is a very special person in the surrogacy community, and most importantly, our surrogate mothers who have made this journey possible for us. Thank you so much for listening, especially on this episode. I can't wait for your feedback. The last thing I'll say before we get into it is these are the stories that make the good glow, the good glow. I hope you enjoy. I think I've been waiting for this podcast for 6 years, maybe more. How are you? Amy White, welcome to the Good Glow.
Thanks for having me. It's a really exciting chat to have. I feel like we've chatted so much over the years, and it's good to properly chat at this stage.
And I think you needed to be at this moment in your journey before we sat down, because your journey is so layered. It's been incredible, but it wasn't
over when we were chatting back, you know, through COVID and coming out the other side. And I always feel like with the Good Glow, I'm connected to when it's the right time to sit down and chat. So I think this, the timing is perfect now.
Yeah.
Okay. So Amy, the Good Glow audience, we are soul sisters and it's all about the sisterhood, but you have the most incredible story of a sisterhood when your sister Katie offered to carry your baby for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so fortunate to have siblings, and my younger sister is just an incredible human, like from every aspect. And she offered to be a surrogate for us, myself and my husband, and it's the most incredible thing. Like the offer of her being such a genuine offer and a pre-researched offer and emotionally prepared one. So when she offered it, it wasn't just a I'll give this a whirl. She had thought it through for her and her husband, and yeah, offered to be a surrogate for us to have our first kid.
Wow. So talk me through that day. What did she ask you to meet, to sit down? Talk us through what, how it unfolded.
So my sister's been living in New Zealand for like probably half her life now at this stage. And she has a wonderful husband. She was living in Ireland though at the time because my dad was sick and she just wanted to be here for the end of his time with us. So she was in Ireland, and over that time, there was endless coffees because we were just all navigating losing dad and that part of our life. And herself and her husband had their first kid and they were pregnant with their second. And we were having brunch one day and they said, like, we've discussed this, we've really looked into it, and we really would like to see if we can be a surrogate for, or if she could be a surrogate, but he's massively part of it too, but if she could be a surrogate for us and try and help us become parents.
And was that an unexpected conversation for you?
Yes. Like you kind of wonder, will a conversation ever come up with, I suppose, like when I knew that our path to parenthood was not going to be me carrying a baby, you know, myself and my husband had many a conversation, looked around at our siblings, all of them, and being like, I wonder, could they do it? I wonder, could they? Oh no, they couldn't. That wouldn't work out for them, or logistics for that. You know, like, it's just something that does come into your mind. You never have that conversation with any other people, but between yourselves as a couple.
You had a list.
Well, no, it wasn't that she was top of it by any means, but she's just an incredible human, and her attitude towards life and her balance and her openness and her just lack of letting crap be part of her life, you know, and knowing what is really the parts that are worth spending time on. So yeah, the two of them had discussed it, and obviously when they said it to us, we all cried. They cried, we cried, even to be able to have that conversation. But she was like, I want to try. I don't know that I can definitely carry for you, but we'd really like to try and see if we can make it happen.
And she was pregnant at the time.
I think she was pregnant with her second baby at the time, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So talk to us then about the reason that you couldn't carry yourself, and something completely unexpected and life-changing happened to you when you were just 25.
Yeah. So at the age of 25, I was just experiencing some abnormal, like, female, like, menstruation things. And I was like, I have to get this checked out. So it took a while to finally get someone who'd listen to me and would do a smear for me. And eventually when I got a smear, it came back that I had abnormal cells. And as soon as I went to get them removed, they were like, they had spotted a big tumor. So I was quickly diagnosed with cervical cancer at the age of 25, which I was a total shock to me. I guess, like yourself, you know, you're just young and you're like not expecting anything like this to crop up. And I also wasn't at the age that I was doing smears, because I was just 25, and it was at the time just when people were starting to, 25 was the age that they were only starting to smear you. Mm-hmm. Like, I had to really push for that smear. And if I hadn't pushed for that smear, I would have been gone within a year, you know? So like, it was a hard push. And I went into my GP, and the the nurse who went to do it, she was like, oh, you know, maybe some women just bleed unexpectedly. And I was like, no, no, please do it. And she was like, oh, and I was like, just do a smear. I need a smear. And she did a smear. And apparently she did a very good smear. So she caught an area that was probably hard to catch. So she did a great job. But it wasn't just I asked for one and got one. I really had to push. So it was a surprise because I wasn't getting smears and then waiting for results. It was like, this something has, I just knew something was wrong. So yeah, one of those life-changing moments that from that I had to have a hysterectomy.
Wow. God, you were so young.
As were you though, you know, it's just like...
And did you feel very alone in that time? Did it feel like life-changing was the magnitude of what was happening, you know, sinking in at the time with you?
I was definitely shocked. I definitely like went into a tunnel of just not listening. I remember going to appointments. My family came to all the appointments with me, like all my siblings and my parents, because I didn't listen to anything. I was like, just find out the information, tell me what I got to do. You guys ask the questions, because I just couldn't. I was like, just need to get the cancer out and then continue with life. So they all came, asked all the questions. Questions being part of it as to, you know, what are the options for me to have family down the line? And yeah, really, I went into a tunnel. But I didn't feel lonely. I have to say, it was one of those times in your life that you realize how amazing people were.
Yeah.
Like I felt the really opposite to lonely. Like my family became more ingrained than they already were. And friends were just amazing. Like friends were so emotionally involved, but also so supportive. So obviously you're going through it on your own and no one else is experiencing it. But I didn't feel lonely. No, it was actually like a lot of love.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
And it's so different for everyone, isn't it? And I too felt a lot of love and I was so grateful that I felt that. And I guess that's why I started my podcast, because I wanted, if anyone does feel the loneliness or they do feel isolated, that they have, you know, somewhere to turn. It's so interesting what you're saying about the tunnel, because I did a podcast with Dr. Shefali, who's kind of in Oprah's circle. She's an incredible woman and she spoke about the tunnel. Okay. And she has written a book, and the tunnel for her was her divorce. And she says that all women will go through a tunnel. And even if you're not ready for the tunnel, and we can resist the tunnel, but the tunnel is coming for us.
Yeah.
And when you come out the other side of the tunnel,
mm-hmm.
everything is different. And it really resonated with a lot of people that listened to the Good Glow, because I think sometimes we can be reluctant to go through the hard things that, you know, eventually when your red lights turn green. But can you remember coming out of the tunnel, or have you only just come out of the tunnel?
My life changed so much after that. Like at the age of 25, I was, you know, traveling the world, just doing nights out all the time, having fun, like would be happy to go to a concert and be in a big crowd. And that has never been the same. I just can't do big crowds. So all of those aspects have changed.
Yes.
And I'm okay with that now in my 40s. I get that and that works for me. But there was a long time that I was just overwhelmed by that. And I'm now comfortably overwhelmed with that.
Yeah. It's just making me wonder, did we go into the tunnel and we haven't yet emerged, or are we out of the tunnel?
I'm quite happy in my little tunnel. Like, you know, where I am now with... I just feel so fortunate. Like I feel like, because when we started chatting back in 2020-ish, I was at a very different stage of that tunnel, you know, and now I'm like really homed in and I have two children through surrogacy, which is like mind blowing.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the mission I wanted to accomplish. And, you know, when we met and started chatting in 2020, I had one child and really in that want for the second. So.
Yeah, and that's what you know, I was saying at the start about the timing, because I think you were very much in it back then And yeah, we'll get to Bobby, but let's talk first about Flo and your beautiful sister, Katie, offering to carry your baby for you.
We created embryos for our daughter, Florence, in Ireland. And my sister was in Ireland at the time. And we did approach quite a few clinics with our wonderful kind surrogate who had planned, and we had worked, gone through, like at this stage we'd gone through fertility counselling together, and we were like, this is going to work, we have a plan, and we had these embryos, but because there's no legislation, I understand a lot of the clinics are like, we don't want to have her carry your child and you not be the mother of the child. And we were willing for my sister to be the mother of my child legally, even though it was my child. But the clinics, which I understand, are in this grey situation that they don't want to get involved in a non-legislated thing. Mm-hmm. So every clinic we went to was like, great, you've got all the parts, but we can't help. And I know some clinics are now helping, but without the proper structure of legislation, there's still not as many open to doing it as there should be, you know. So my sister living in New Zealand, being a wonderful country and so open to family types of everything, and you know, anyone can be family as long as the love and the care and the fono is just incredible. So we went through an application process there, we applied to their system, and we said, you know, sisters, when it's a resident there, we've got embryos, we've all done our counseling, we've all had conversations as to, you know, the logistics of what happens pre-baby, during pregnancy, afterwards, you know. We had considered as much as we could, and they had given us amazing guidelines as counselling questions that had to be asked and filled out to go in the application. Mm-hmm. So everyone understood what they were getting into, and then they looked at the process and said, yeah, we feel like you guys have a clear understanding in the safest way to protect everybody, for the baby, for the surrogate, for the surrogate's partner, for the parents. This is good to go. It was a big project, and we shipped our embryos from New Zealand to Ireland. And my sister carried my daughter, and she was born in 2020.
Wow. And tell us about the moment that you found out Katie was pregnant.
You know what? It was our first pregnancy. And I do think that's something wonderful about a first pregnancy, is you kind of just assume that it's all going to be straightforward. And it was, like, my sister did a natural cycle. She didn't actually do IVF. They just did the transfer and natural cycle. And Florence went in and she worked, and she got pregnant in the first try, which is, only now do I realize how unbelievably lucky we were, you know. But again, we went into it being like, of course, we would put an embryo in her and it's going to work, you know, and it did. And yeah, she said she felt pregnant straight away because it just felt so much for her. And I think it was, you know, around week 10 days or something post-transfer, you do those bloods. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, we just also assumed that she was going to get the blood test and it was going to confirm the pregnancy, you know, and did. And yeah, Katie was pregnant. She had two kids time, a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And she was in New Zealand and we were in Dublin, and she, 12-hour time change, rang us to tell us that she was pregnant. And yeah, it was all go. Like, just amazing. Like, it was 4 years to get to that stage of admin and IVF, to get to that.
Yeah.
And I feel very grateful that it was a straightforward enough journey to pregnancy for her.
And I think that when you're so caught up in the admin and the doing and the trans, you know, the IVF couriers and all that, you almost don't allow yourself to think about the fun bit, which is possibly getting pregnant. I remember our clinic texted me on day 10, and I was just about to jump into the 40-foot with Trisha's transformation. So random. But we had arranged to go for a swim, and there was just a tiny bit of miscommunication. So we thought the news was going to come at 12, but it came at 8 with the time difference.
These things happen.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not even with Jamie. I'm not at home. Like, yes. We didn't plan for this. And Trish was the first person I told. Like, I hadn't even spoken to Jamie.
Yeah.
And we just jumped into the sea together. And I was like, oh God, maybe, you know, it was meant to be this way. But nothing is ever straightforward, is it?
Nothing is straightforward. And even though that transfer was straightforward, all the work to get there was so complicated.
Yeah.
And it was, in a sense, a straightforward pregnancy for Katie, but a very emotionally challenging one. So I think the anxiety of just the responsibility of carrying her niece. She didn't know it was a niece until she was born, but she was carrying this baby for us and wondering, you know, like, as she was saying, it's like if someone puts their baby in the back of your car in a car seat and is like, do you mind just driving on the M50 with this baby for a while?
Wow.
Like with someone else's baby, but she did it for, you know, 8-9 months. She was like, just that responsibility of getting this baby back to you safely. So that, I know that aspect was a lot. And
because I've heard you speaking about Katie had that kind of emotional side, and I always wondered what the emotion was.
Yeah, she just said it's a responsibility. I guess it's kind of like, you know, when you're minding someone else's small child in the house, you're just a little bit more like on edge than when it's your own child. You know, you kind of know their movements. And also it's something we'd not done before, you know. Yeah. So, and she was obviously in New Zealand and I was in Dublin. So for half of the pregnancy until we went over at 20 weeks due to a global lockdown. So
just to add another layer.
A short break to remind you that Boyne Valley Honey is the official breakfast partner of Pieta's Darkness Into Light 2026, proudly supported by Electric Ireland. Register now at darknessintolight.ie through the link in the show notes and be part of something really meaningful on Saturday, May 9th at 4:15 a.m. I can't wait to see you there. Over 6,000 people receive ongoing support through Pieta's therapy services. If you can't make the event, you can still support. You can pick up the promotional packs of Boyne Valley Honey in stores nationwide, with 25 cents from each pack going to Pieta, because it is a small way to make a big difference.
Yourself and your lovely husband, Reggie, decide to travel to all the way to New Zealand for the 20-week scan. And how long had you planned to be there for?
So we booked flights to go for the 20-week scan because we hadn't seen Katie pregnant and we hadn't, you know, been for any scans. Like, we obviously were getting photos and videos and all the rest, but like, it is all quite abstract, a surrogacy journey. Mm-hmm. And at least if you can somewhat touch a little bit of it, like if you could see, you know, it's a little... It's such an unusual thing to describe, but so we were like, we'll go to 20-week scan, we'll be there for a scan, and that may make it a bit more real, you know, because it's very bizarre to comprehend that your baby's on the way, but you're not pregnant, you know.
Yeah.
So we went over for the 20-week scan and we actually had to shift our flights because Katie was like, oh, I think there's this pandemic-y thing is kind of, and I was like, whatever, we'll change it if it makes you more settled. So we changed our flights and within 24 hours, we left. And then when we got there, the borders closed 2 days later. And I feel so grateful that we, whatever way, we just felt that sense of urgency because no one was really taking COVID that seriously at that time, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Everyone was a bit like, whatever.
You
know,
what
people
this?
Are buying hand sanitizer. What's the deal?
Yeah. What month or...
It was like literally just before all the stores closed.
Okay, early March. Kind of.
Yeah, like I was still working. So we arrived over and the borders closed. And I suppose, again, for us, one of those really fortunate things that we did leave at that time was because my daughter is not my daughter. If we hadn't left then, trying to get Katie home with our child or vice versa would have been impossible until the borders opened 18 months later, you know? So those are those kind of like legal parts that we need to solve, because if Katie had given birth there, we couldn't have gone over to, because my eldest daughter is still technically my niece because Katie gave birth to her mm-hmm. in the Irish law.
Even though she's your...
My husband's child.
Yes.
And she's genetically linked to me and I have had her in my home for nearly 6 years. And she shouts, Mom, all day long. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
So in the eyes of the Irish system, she is your niece because your sister
gave birth to her. So I'm now a legal guardian to her
yeah.
after 2 years,
yeah.
but she's not my child. So, and also for the first 2 years, you can't become a guardian. You have to wait for 2 years
yes.
for them to become a guardian. So for that first 2 years, if Katie had got stuck in New Zealand with mm-hmm. my daughter, she would have had to look after her.
Yeah.
And I know globally there was a lot of people who just struggled to get to their surrogates. And, you know, it was a hard time. So we were so lucky to get on that flight that day.
So basically, if you hadn't have planned to go over for the 20-week scan,
yeah,
the New Zealand borders would have been locked. And
Katie was pregnant with her own child in the eyes of the Irish law.
Yeah. And Katie so then would have had to give birth and keep Flo in New Zealand for at least 18 months.
Well, yeah, it was 18 months before they opened the borders. They were the last country to open their borders. And or else Katie could have come home and left her children behind and, you know, and given birth to Florence in Ireland and stayed here for 18 months.
Oh.
You know, like we were so lucky we went on that day and the mind boggles that we did. But then, so we obviously rock up with packing for 2 weeks and we in a sense get stuck in New Zealand, but in the best possible way. So we moved in with my brother-in-law and his wife.
What's your brother-in-law's name?
Blake.
Oh.
Poor Blake. He loves Reggie, but I don't think he wants to live at me. So we all hung out together for like a wildly serious lockdown. Like there was no packages posted for the first, I think it was 4 or 5 months in New Zealand. They only did paper post. So like I didn't have baby stuff there and I was ordering bits and bobs, but they weren't even delivering any packages to keep people safe. They weren't picking up recycling. They were only picking up the general waste. It was so much more strict than here. So Blake had us in the house. Now, in fairness, we did a lot of cooking, cleaning and helping out with the kids. And it was amazing to spend that time with the kids because they were so little. And then obviously we were there for an earlier than due birth as well, because I don't know how the timing would have worked out if we'd actually not had COVID come home and then had tried to go over for, you know, how do you know when your baby's going to come?
So how long did you end up staying in New Zealand for?
6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. So
and
we
were
at home when Florence was 6 weeks. So we stayed until she was 6 weeks.
Wow. And was there ever a moment like that you didn't recognize your life during that time?
Oh, like it was so bizarre. So in New Zealand, they have these little sleep outs, which are like a little house which has a bed or a bunk bed and can't have running water. So you can have like little kind of garden room. So myself and Reggie slept in bunk beds for months. Well, there was no sleep. There was we were in a bed in these bunk beds for a long time.
Were you on the top
kids
or bottom?
Sheets. I was on the top. and then eventually we moved into the people who lived upstairs. A room came up because someone moved out, but you weren't able to go and find somewhere to live because you weren't even allowed to go and view places. Like it was so strict. So when we go into them and eat meals with them and hang out with them and go back to our bunk beds.
Oh my God.
So
good old days.
It was a magic time. It really
yeah.
was. And like, so glad we were there for all of it.
And that's like, so magic, isn't it?
It's like, so cool. Yeah, it's so cool. And just the relationship we have as a crew now from the four of us adults and the two kids. It's very different. They're different niece and nephew, Cooper and Eileen, to my other nieces and nephews because we spent so much time with them.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
And we've obviously been back since as well. And, you know, they live in our pockets and they're coming to visit in a few weeks' time. So it's a really cool bond. And their bond of Flo is so nice. You know, she's a very different cousin for them too. So, yeah.
And I know that, you know, you're looking at the situation, like so grateful to Katie and so lucky to be in that position. But what was there ever? And I feel like I can ask you this because I've been through something similar with another woman carrying my baby. But did you ever get that kind of pang or that feeling in your stomach that you just wished it could have been different? Or were you okay?
Well, you see, because my diagnosis when I was 25, I was single and I wasn't with a life partner and none of my friends had had kids, like my siblings hadn't started to have kids. It was a different thing to be taken away at a different stage.
Yeah.
Like, I think if I'd been 10 years older, that might have been different, but I knew I was never going to carry my own child. You know, and we'd looked into adoption as well, which was really lengthy and complicated. So it's funny. So I've had two kids now I have through surrogacy, one carried by my sister and one by an incredible Georgian lady. And yeah, like when my sister was pregnant with Florence, like I never kind of felt like I wanted to touch her belly or anything, even though we lived together. It's abstract. You're very grateful, but it's just hard to comprehend.
Yeah.
But the moment I met my two daughters, they were born, you know, I guess it's kind of like when you have a second parent or a husband, like they don't meet their babies till they're born, you know, mm-hmm. and then they meet them and then they're their babies, you know, like you've been pregnant. I've never been pregnant, so I don't know the difference. I know the struggle to get to having a child, but
I was so lucky to experience a pregnancy, but on tally, I remember going to the hospital and wearing a shirt so that I could open it and have skin to skin.
Yeah, I did that too.
Like the dad.
Or, yeah.
You know, or the other parent.
Yes. Yeah. But because I guess we have so many similarities in our experiences, but then because I've never experienced that difference, mm-hmm. I just don't know what that's like.
Yeah. But you're so articulate in how you describe it. And tell us about the day Flo made your miracle baby made her arrival into the world.
So that was kind of unplanned as well. She decided at 36 weeks that she kind of might want to come. And I was like, great, that's exciting. We get our baby sooner. And our midwife was like, this is not ideal. We had the most amazing midwife in New Zealand.
Who's not ideal.
Who has since come to visit us. And she's like,
has she?
Yeah, she really helped us, like helped us be involved in the pregnancy. And also helped us when the baby's born. Because, you know, you do need that support, whether you've given birth or not, you know. Mm-hmm. We were like, yeah, but sure, the baby must be ready to come. And she's like, you want to keep the baby in for longer? And we were like, really? You know,
yeah.
First time parents, what would you know any different? So Florence tried to come at 36 weeks. And Katie's water broke then. And obviously we were excited and Katie and Penny weren't. So Katie kept her in until 37 weeks. And poor Katie had two inductions that didn't work. 2 days of trying and trying. And as Katie was saying, maybe it was that she just couldn't get the oxytocin. Oxytocin, is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
You can tell I haven't been pregnant. Mm-hmm. She just couldn't release to, she just, something just wasn't the same as trying to deliver her own kids.
Wow.
So after 2 days of, she just couldn't make progress with her. And I think she had just lost the will and she had done everything to try, you know, and not bond with this baby that she's trying to get out for us. And mm-hmm. I can't describe what it's like trying to watch your sister give birth to your baby. And also it not happening either, you know, and trying to, Katie's husband, Blake, is amazing. He's a very good birth partner. And he was absolutely brilliant trying to help her birth our child. And it just didn't work. And then eventually they gave her an epidural, didn't work a lot of times, and eventually that worked. And then Florence was just, I think she made the decision that she was not coming out that way. And we had an emergency C-section then. And I was in the C-section with my sister. We have the most amazing photo captured that just, of the relief for the two of us of, oh my God, she's here. We've done this. We didn't also know it was going to be Florence. I was convinced it was a boy. But yeah, seeing like when Florence was born, that relief for Katie to be like, you're her parent. God, it's just that's all she wanted was for me to be a parent. Like, it's like just the coolest thing that she wanted that, you know, and for her husband to want it, because it was a lot for him, you know. So, and he obviously had to pick up pieces afterwards of her hormones afterwards to support her.
Is there a moment that you remember over that couple of days that stands out like a moment with Katie?
The hospital was incredible in New Zealand. They'd had maybe one or two more surrogates before in that hospital, and they understood that Katie needed a room and I needed a room, because sometimes you don't get a room as a new parent through surrogacy. You might get a chair and a cot. So I had a room. I had also induced my milk to breastfeed. So I had a lactation consultant came to help me, and they helped me, and they helped Katie. And then I went in and showered Katie each day and dressed her and helped her. But we were a couple of rooms apart, so she didn't have to be in a room with a baby. So she could rest and not have to deal with the noise of a baby, but then come and see Florence when she needed to, and I could help her post C-section, which you need help. But all of it, like, and even still all of it now is just, so my sister's home in 2 weeks with her family for a couple of months, and seeing Katie and Florence together is just the coolest. Like, they just are very close, and yeah.
Wow. I think I'm lost for words, because I can't even, it's so layered, isn't it? What was coming up for me there is, you know, when Flo listens to the story one day, how everyone around her did the best they could to bring her into the world.
You know, she tells me already about it. She talks about it all the time, and she's quite adamant that she's a Kiwi, which she is. She's a Kiwi citizen. And I really want her forever to have that bond with New Zealand, and if she, like, spend time there studying or in school, or, you know, it's a beautiful country, beautiful people. And she knows, and she will inform everybody of her story. And now that we have a second child through surrogacy, she will inform everybody about Bobby's journey, which is totally different as well. But she's very up for telling people about it, because I think she understands it's very special.
I want to talk about the day you left New Zealand.
Yeah.
6 months there, and now it was time to make this enormous journey home. Every emotion must have existed that day.
It was such a weird day, because it was still mask time. The flights were kind of flying-ish, but we had to fly 36 hours of a journey home with a 6-week-old baby. And, you know, you were afraid to touch anything. So we had to say goodbye to Katie as well, not knowing when we'd see her again. But also knowing that one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle for me, and I don't know about you, was landing in Dublin Airport with my babies and being like, I'm home. Yeah. I'm home with my babies. It was one of the parts that I've always dreamt of on both of the kids, is being like, the babies are born and they're home in their country, and people can meet them. Like, especially like their family meeting them that hadn't, you know, like grandparents. And so leaving Katie at the airport with a mask, she couldn't even come into the terminal, and we came home and we flew home, and then we came home to our family, socially distancing with masks, being like, great, well, let's isolate again for 2 weeks, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was everything of emotions, I guess, you know, like.
And did you ever feel like angry that you had to do all of this, or like, was it frustrating, or like, is Reggie a great person for you to kind of let it all out to? Like, how does he support you?
Well, like, I have a wonderful husband who I couldn't have done any of these things with someone else, you know. He's so great. I guess when we started going out, he knew that I'd had cancer and that I couldn't carry my own kids. So that was something we didn't have to sit down and have a conversation about. I've always spoken openly about it to everyone because I feel like it's nothing to hide. Yeah, he's always known that it was going to be incredibly complicated. We've had so many incredibly tough years and moments through the IVF part. IVF is so hard. And we did IVF thinking we just needed to do IVF, but actually it turned out we also had a fertility struggle too, on top of missing uterus. And then on top of so many other things to come to try and have a sibling. So I do feel, though, so fortunate that we are born when we were born. Like if we were 10, 20 years older, we wouldn't have had this as an option. Like science is just incredible.
Yeah.
This science, there's amazing humans who are donors. There's amazing surrogates. There's amazing people who support us on these journeys through legal and other families who've had kids through surrogacy who support each other, and agencies who help these things happen. And like, if we were 10 years older, we possibly wouldn't have any kids.
So tell us then about Bobby.
So Bobby was really difficult to get. After the really straightforward Florence, who took 4 years, but only the one try.
I can't believe we're calling the New Zealand journey straightforward.
That's incredible. Really easy. So Bobby, when Katie was still pregnant with Florence, it was a few weeks before Florence was born, and Katie was like, "Do you think you'll want to have another baby?" And I was like, "What? Like, I'm having a baby, like another one? Like, how could you even think that this is a thing? We're like, we just want to be parents." And she was like, "Oh, I feel like when your baby comes, you're going to want to have another one." And I was like, "Really?" You know, I hadn't got to that stage. And then obviously Florence was born and I was like, "Oh, wow, I get that now."
Yeah.
And also we did have embryos that we hadn't used, which I think is something that is maybe not discussed enough, is how hard it is to have embryos and not necessarily need to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So we had embryos and Florence had arrived so straightforwardly. And I'm one of four kids and my husband is one of six. So we really wanted Florence to have a sibling. So we started to try and have a sibling for Florence when Florence was only a few months old. We were like, "Let's do this. We've got to look into this." But it wasn't going to be an option for us to be able to go back to New Zealand. And Katie was like, "If I did it again, I think you'd need to be here." And just for us trying to work, and it wasn't going to work to go back again for 6 or 9 months.
And do you think Katie would have done it again?
I think she would have tried. Yeah.
Wow.
But we felt that we couldn't upheave our lives and move back to New Zealand in like work wise. And, you know, I think we kind of needed to be doing our lives a bit too, and Katie not be doing our lives for us too much.
Yeah.
So we looked into different options of surrogacy again. That, like, it's complicated to look into it at the moment because there's not a structure to support, like a guideline. So we started a surrogacy journey in the Ukraine, pre-war. And we'd done a transfer the week before the war started, and that had failed. And then we obviously had more embryos, and we still really passionately wanted Florence to have a sibling. So we had to take a break in the Ukraine for quite a while just to see what was happening. And it just didn't work for us. The embryos didn't work.
And sorry to interrupt you, Amy, were our embryos in the back of a car together being driven to Slovakia?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's insane. I just feel like so much goes into having these babies.
Yeah.
Like, it's just bonkers. Like, no one's surrogacy babies are straightforward, even though Florence was. All of the things that go into having her.
Yeah.
It's insane what we're the most passionate parents. Like, when these babies are born, these these babies are so wanted. Like from any parent through surrogacy, they've done everything to have them. And when I think about that man from the clinic who took all of our potential babies and we're like, these people need them. And he had no emotional link to them, bar he knew how important they were.
Yeah. And so he put the cryo chambers in the back of his car and drove as the bombs were dropping on Kiev, drove them out of Ukraine over the border into Slovakia to safety.
And he doesn't know us. You know, I think that's the most bizarre part. Like what a man. Like,
how did you find out about that?
Do you know what? I can remember bumping into you in Dundrum that day.
Really? I don't remember.
Do you not remember when I bumped into you and Zara and the two of us stood looking at each other crying? Do you not remember that? Do you not remember that? I don't really remember a lot around that time because we had a surrogate in the Ukraine that we were desperately trying to find and seeing if we could support her and trying to get contact with her to see if there was anything she needed or could do, you know? She wasn't pregnant with her child, but she'd given us this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I knew we had embryos to layer. And then I remember this coming up in one of the WhatsApp groups, maybe.
Yeah.
It had come from Facebook group into one of the WhatsApp groups. Like there's a few WhatsApp groups of different parents who are going through a surrogacy journey, which is just amazing to have someone else who kind of gets a little bit of the paperwork as well and the emotions. So the Ukraine was obviously incredibly hard. And it's still hard. It's still hard to see that this beautiful country and these people are still having such a tough time. Yeah.
And it just really kind of makes you see actually how slowly time goes, because this is still their reality,
I know
every day. And I don't remember bumping into you that day, but I do remember looking at Pia that week. One night, she came up to me and I was just sitting on the couch staring at the wall, and I looked at her and I couldn't remember if I'd fed her. I couldn't remember if I'd cooked her dinner that day.
I get that. It was like, it was so shattering for us because we were about to do another transfer as well, and we knew that our embryos were there. And like when we eventually tracked down our surrogate and she had moved to somewhere safe, there was somewhat relief. But I know that I have quite a few friends who have babies born in the Ukraine, and their experience of being there, of how beautiful a country it is and how lovely the people have been. And yeah, it's hard to fathom that that's still their reality.
Yeah. And so everything, I suppose, all of our journeys or our paths were just paused for a while, I think, as everyone just tried to kind of pick themselves up. And we were lucky enough to be safe in our own beds at night and have a roof over our head. And I remember that's one thing that I was focusing on during that time. But when time allowed and it felt right for you, you turned your attention to Georgia.
Yeah. So I had researched the Ukraine and we'd ended up there, but I had also, Georgia was on the list of countries that there's a good structure, safe structure for everybody. And it felt like a right move for us. And as we started to research it, I started to meet more people who have had their babies in Georgia. Mm. At this stage, we had run out of embryos as well. And I'd gone through my menopause after a surgery during lockdown. So we started to look at Georgia, and we also needed an egg donor as well. But I think we'd been so emotionally beaten by all of the tries and fails that, you know, there were so many conversations. Should we keep trying? Should we, you know, do we keep trying? Do we not just be happy? But I think nearly the harder it got, the more I was like, I cannot end this broken. I need to have a sibling for Florence. And I had been, over the years, I'd had so many low days with her because I wanted something for her so bad that I was like, I can't have had all those low days and then her not get a sibling. Mm-hmm. You know, now that we have her sibling, I'm like, those bad days, there's a different kind of guilt around them. So,
right.
We were 7 embryo transfers to have Bobby.
Oh my God.
Yeah. After Florence being 1. So 7 tries and 4, nearly 5 years to have Bobby.
And you were in Dublin about to leave for Tbilisi.
Yeah.
When she was born.
Yeah. So I had picked this arbitrary date in my mind. I was like, I'm going to Georgia on that day. And my husband was like, why? It's very early. Like, you're going like a month early. And I was like, what if the baby comes? And he was like, well, I'm not going with you. You can go. So I booked my flights for my mom and myself and Florence to go a month early. And I was like, we'll go on holidays. We'll hang out there. I'll go to the supermarket. I'll do all the things. We'll experience the city before this baby comes. And my husband, we have a restaurant, so he had to stay. So anyways, the day that we're headed to the airport, our baby was born. The day I had booked my flights on, like I booked my flights when our surrogate was like 10 weeks pregnant. So I was like, that's the date I'm going on. I booked the accommodation, everything for that date. So it turns out our baby arrived the day that I had booked the flights for.
So and that's another miracle, like going for the 20-week scan in New Zealand.
Yeah. So bizarre. So now we didn't arrive until she was 24 hours old.
Did that cause you a lot of anxiety?
No. No.
Okay.
Do you know what? She came and we kind of knew she was coming with it. We had a couple of hours ahead. They were like, we think she's coming soon. You need to change your flights or get your husband to book flights. So I said, would you pack your bags, please? And she was born when we were at home. And like, I think for Reggie, he was a bit like, I can't believe we're not there. And I was like, do you know what? She is here. I never have to try and have baby again. And our surrogate is fine. I can meet her in 24 hours time. I just feel really at peace that everyone's safe.
Yeah.
She's here. Like, we'll be there soon.
I think when you're on these, on a surrogacy journey, you have to release severe attachment to outcomes. You have to just let it unfold the way it's unfolding because you can't do anything else.
Yeah. And she came at 36 weeks as well. So she came, like, you know, there was no planning. It's impossible to plan being like, even when people give birth in their own country, I don't even know how they manage to work out what day they need to have their bag packed to the hospital. But when you're in a different country and you're not carrying the baby, so we weren't there for her birth, but that was also totally fine. And I guess the things that I'd wondered about before we had had the two girls, you do wonder, like, what'll happen when the baby's born? Will I be like, is this mine? Or, you know, do I need to do the skin to skin? And, you know, all of the things, they're important, but like just the safe arrival of the baby and the safe arrival or the safe birth for the surrogate. Like, once you get those two things, it's fine. You know?
I've actually never said this before, but I wasn't in the room when Tal was born.
Yeah.
Just the way things unfolded that day in the hospital. And I was standing outside and I watched her birth on FaceTime.
But you did see it though.
I saw it.
Yeah.
I feel the same way as you. I just wanted everyone to be safe and happy and healthy. And I didn't, my personal experience of that day, like, didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. Like, it is for us, but at this, but you're like, quite far down the pecking order of and that's like, but like, it's the people who have helped these babies arrive is it's their time. And I do think a lot of babies born through surrogacy, just the logistics of you being there, they're quite slim that will happen. I know it seems hard to think that, but you're there as soon as you can be, or you're outside the door. Like, my husband was outside the door when Florence was born. I know that broke his heart. But then I think when he saw her, he was like, oh, it's Grant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then we were obviously both in our house in Dublin when Bobby was born, and we had to go to the airport and like, you know, be in the airport, be like, which isn't a baby. You know, so yeah, it's, but once they're there with you, like, it's just like, and that meeting of them, like, because I met Bobby, she bought into us to meet me and my husband. And like, it's just like, I can't describe how wild it is to meet this person that you've longed for so long.
Yeah. And coming back to the tunnel, like, when you get home and with Bobby, you have Flo, Reggie, yourself, and this is the moment, I suppose, that you've been waiting for all those years. Like, is that the moment you come out of the tunnel? Is that the moment your shoulders could drop? Did that feel like happy ever after? Because you probably had been so used to fighting for your family that when all the pieces fall into place, what is that moment like for you?
Like, I just feel so content. Mm. I just feel like this is what we needed. Like, seeing the joy that Bobby has brought to Florence is just like, I am so happy they have siblings, they have each other. You know, it's just, I don't need anything else. You know, I just don't, like, it's everything. It's all that matters. And, you know, quite a few people have said, you know, oh, going from one to two is so difficult. Like, how are you finding it? And I'm like, it is so much easier to not try for a baby. I don't have to. I know I have two and I've gone from one to two. That's stressful, but it's nothing like trying to have a baby. Mm. Trying to have a baby through IVF or surrogacy is so hard that I'm so pleased that I never have to do that. It's just been such a relief for us to not have to try. And like, how that has just helped our dynamics in the house of being like, this is us. We are a little family. Florence has someone to share all these things with. Like, they play together. Like, Bobby's only 8 months old, but Florence is constantly on top of her, playing on top of her, like on top of her. It's just, and Florence is so excited by her, you know, and the bond between the two of them is so, like, it's worth it. So I just feel like I'm in a tunnel, but I don't ever need to get out of it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's all I need. This is these people are all I need. They have each other. I don't need anything else, just for everyone to stay healthy and be happy. Like, that's it done. Like, I just feel so happy.
Wow. It's such an incredible story. I mean, it's almost like a movie.
Do you have a really long movie?
I'd watch it. Oh. I'd stay till the end. So let's end with this. Has there been, Bobby is 8 months old now, has there been a standout moment or a five-star moment? And I'll share my one with you. When we came back from Georgia, it was the winter. And we had a little baby bath for Tal, and we put it in front of the fire, and I've no idea why, but we filled it up in the living room and we put her in it, and Pia was playing around in her jammies and the dog was there, and I was like, oh, whoa, if I could have shown myself this picture, you know, in those dark days when I was diagnosed with cancer, when I was going through IVF, where I felt like the only thing I could do was have hope. You know, if I could have shown myself this picture, I would have been so happy. Has there been a standout moment for you over the last eight months that stopped you in your tracks?
I just feel like every morning when we get up and we have breakfast together is so nice. Like, those are the things that, like, that is just what I want, is that normality of being together and having us all at the table together.
Yeah.
You know? And seeing the two girls, like, they just look at each other and they smile at each other, and like, they're not, they're not necessarily speaking the same language yet, you know. And Florence did say to me when Bobby was born, you know, is she going to speak Georgian?
Yes!
I was like, no, I think she's going to speak English. And she said, but she's been born in Georgia. And I was like, well, you were born in New Zealand. She was like, yep, I speak Kiwi.
Oh my God.
But the two of them, just their smiles and their interactions together is just like, it's so cool. Like, you know, they just find each other funny. Like, that's all, like, just seeing them doing that is just like, it just brings me, yeah, just such joy, you know? Yeah.
I love it. We had the same, exact same conversation with Pia. Like, one day she's quite dramatic. She's like, and we were like, what? She's like, we're going to have to teach Talia to speak English.
It's a fair question. This is what I mean. Kids ask anything. Anything goes, you know?
Yeah. And you've spoken, you know, to me just before we came on about you will go back to Georgia one day.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's such a beautiful country.
Yeah.
It took my breath away.
Such a cool city. Like, I'd love to see more Georgia, but Tbilisi was beautiful and we were there late summer. So, like, it was blue skies and amazing fruit and veg, and we had amazing food experiences, and we had amazing experiences with all the people we met. Like, it was, it culturally was just so interesting, and the architecture is amazing.
Yeah.
Very hot.
I wish there was direct flights, but it's a good place for Reggie to end up,
yeah,
considering his background. And what's your restaurant called?
Reggie's.
Yeah.
In
Rathmines.
Rathmines.
Yeah. Just Reggie's, yeah.
Not Reggie's and Amy's.
No. I know. It is mine too. I think people forget that too. You know, your husband's restaurant, like, it's mine too. But yes. But we had an amazing food experience, and Georgian wine, like, I just did not know was going to be so fabulous. We had the most amazing food experience, and because I hadn't given birth, we were out for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so we had an amazing time there. So I felt it kind of gave us that opportunity to learn more about the culture of where our child is born and where our surrogate is from and where our egg donor is from. So I can't imagine not going back and spending more time there, you know?
Yeah. Well, Amy White, you are a soul sister. You've gone on an incredible journey. I hope you write a book or get that movie.
The dyslexic in me will not be writing a book unless someone can write it for me.
It's an incredible story, but one that is rooted in absolute, like, love and support and collaboration, which I think is a beautiful way to rear our children. And that's what, you know, I live by the Blue Zones way, and that's how they do it in the Blue Zones. You know, it takes a village. And I'm proud and so honoured that you could sit down with me on the Google Cloud today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the chat.
What an incredible conversation with an incredible person. Amy White, thank you so much for being my guest on the Google Cloud today. Thank you so much to you for listening. Thank you for holding us in this space. It was so intimate, so private, so delicate and precious, and, you know, to open up about the birth stories and speak about how, I suppose, not every moment is going to unfold as we may have expected, and still, that's okay. I really appreciate you listening. I hope that you will share this with someone who you think might enjoy it, and I'll leave Amy's details in the show notes if you want to send her a message. Lots of love, and I'll see you next week.